The Gary Knoll Show, daily at noon on the Progressive Radio Network.
When Jesus
live from New York City, it's the Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
I'm Gary Knoll, and I'd like to welcome you to this program.
My guest has been around covering many issues for some time. Chris Hedges is one of our nation's most insightful cultural critics and authors. For 20 years, he was a foreign correspondent in Central America, the Middle East, Africa, and the Balkans. He wrote for the New York Times for 15 of those years, Christian Science Monitor, and National Public Radio. Anyone that Pulitzer Prize for his report, he's on global terrorism. And he's the author of Death of the Liberal Class from the Nation Books. Nice to have you with us today, Chris.
Thank you.
I've been down to Wall Street 28 times. I brought food. I've had meetings with some 250 of the organizers and people on one evening, quietly and privately, in a building there on M. Walker Street. And I let them know, especially the younger ones, who really didn't have a real firm grasp on history, that there have been movements like the Civil Rights Movement, the Feminist Movement, the Suffragettes, the coal miners, the union movements, that showing up is important. Protesting, being angry, that's legitimate. But you also have to have a long-term mindset to be able to sustain this, not for a few weeks, but for years. And what goes into making a movement actually cause some change. Even if the change isn't ideal, at least it's something. Where civil rights, we certainly eliminated a lot of the overt policies of segregation. We didn't, at the same time, make it equal that a black and a white, both applying for a job, would have equal opportunity to get it and be equally rewarded. So that is still another battle to be fought. And also that they would be infiltrated. Be very conscious of those who would try to sabotage your movement by doing something extreme that doesn't reflect your true intents of being here. Or they would try to marginalize you by showing if you come from a privileged background or your parents are okay and you're not really struggling, that somehow you don't deserve to be there and you're really not a part of any movement. The moment it gets cold, the moment it starts to snow, the moment you feel uncomfortable, you go right back to the life that you had, and then the movement becomes something more in a bubble and deflates. And I'm speaking with a lot of people who want to talk to the media about globalization, about how people make their money, the ethics of the Wall Street firms, the lack of ethics in the Democrats and Republicans in power, and nobody wants to hear their story. The media is not getting that out. So from day two until today, every hour we have them with an open line on Progressive Radio Network where they can do news updates. We've been down there with reporters doing news updates, our investigation. So at least to our audience, let you hear what their ideas are. So that's the larger picture I'd like for you to start with and take any part of this and share your insights, please.
Well, first of all, I think the movement has staying power, and I've spent a lot of time there. The engine of this movement is probably not New York-based. It's West Coast-based. And a lot of the people who showed up on September 17th and who are still there are people who have a long experience living outside the system in terms of squatter encampments. Many of these people were involved in the two-year tree sit on the Berkeley campus to protect those redwoods. They were involved in taking over buildings on the Berkeley campus. And so while I think that the criticism that this movement is at this point predominantly white, or with children coming out of the middle class, is correct. And I think, of course, there's a wariness, and I spend a lot of time talking about this in my column today on TruthDig among communities of color, which, of course, have been protesting, organizing, and trying to battle against the institutional racism put in place by the corporate state for years, if not decades, with little assistance or even notice from the white liberal class. I think it would be wrong to say that these people don't have resilience. I think that the core of this movement, you know, sleeping on the streets, sleeping on concrete, is not new for them. Secondly, and, you know, I don't disagree with you on much, Gary, but on this issue, I actually support keeping the sort of goal of the movement fundamentally focused on the corporate state. We have undergone a coup d'etat in slow motion, as the philosopher John Ralston Saul calls it. Corporate power dominates every single aspect of our life. The judiciary at this point is a wholly owned subsidiary of the corporate state. As you well know, the media is essentially dominated by courtiers who work for the corporate state, roughly about a half dozen corporations, Viacom, General Electric, Disney, Rupert Murdoch's News Corp, control just about everything 90% of most Americans see, watch, read, or hear. And if we don't remove the corporate state, we're finished, not only in terms of a viable open society, but ultimately in terms of the ecosystem itself. There is no way in this country to vote against the interests of Goldman Sachs. The fossil fuel industry, in the name of short-term profit, is literally trashing the ecosystem on which the human species depends for life, and we stood by as the Obama administration and their corporate overlords went to Copenhagen and shredded the Kyoto Accords, as if those were even enough. I think that individual groups who join the movement, we've seen Teamsters go down there, we've seen teachers, can make their individual demands, whether those are based on saving teachers' unions, and I think that some force within American society, and I think this is part of the reason that this movement resonates with such vast numbers of Americans, has to name the Leviathan and has to be willing to hold fast to this campaign to bring that Leviathan down. Because, quite frankly, if we don't dismantle the corporate state, we're finished. So I have great hopes for the movement. I'm certainly, as spending so much time down there, aware of the divisions and factions that have evolved, and even antagonisms. But anybody who has looked closely at movements, certainly the civil rights movement, all movements are riven with these kinds of disputes. I'm very hopeful, and I think they do have the staying power, and I think that because this message resonates with such a wide public, and the difference, of course, being between this movement and the new left of the 60s is that labor was, especially the white working class, was very antagonistic to the anti-war movement. Here, this is a message that labor absorbs and understands.
Okay, I appreciate those insights. Now let's go to one other issue I believe that is not being addressed anywhere with any real movement behind it. And that is, I believe at some point, if the unions really got their act together, the rank and file, I believe, would do this. I believe they've been resistant or even compromised at much of the is to general strikes. Much as they do in Greece right now, it is the unions, more than the youth over there, they're joined by the youth, but the unions that know that they have 30,000 jobs that are going to be cut, that's been mandated, they just signed that last week, and so they have to represent the people. And so they're going on general strike. I believe it'll change the government over there in time. You see the same thing in Ireland, and you see it in France and Italy. You do not see this in the United States, except on rare occasion. But if unions really saw that we've got to stop globalization, stop the outsourcing these jobs to countries, and who are the people doing it? Well, it's not a tremendous number, but it's the same major mega corporations, and these are all politically connected. if we, for example, began to boycott banks, if we began to have a general strike and not pay back the interest, I'm talking about the interest on student loans, that would save a lot of students so they don't end up in debt peonage. And stop shopping at Walmart. Have a boycott and have, you know, right out there, have people of all walks and classes of life picketing, showing we respect American jobs, or at least labor that was in the United States and not made out in Japan. But we don't have that now. And I believe part of the reason we don't have it is because the John Kerrys and the Obamas and so many other Democrats who say, well, don't do that, that's too extreme, or even on MSNBC and other programs, they're now all aligning, Keith Olbermann, Rachel Maddow, they're all aligning themselves with Obama again, as if there is no other choice. And I'm saying, hold on a second, there are a lot of good choices that are pro-people, anti the Wall Street people, anti the Fed, and they could do a much better job than the people in power, but they're not even considering having a third option, so we're right back to where we started. The left that is compromised, the right that is compromised, dictating what the talking points are going to be, what the issues are going to be, and so nothing gets done, and they tentatively agree to support the people on Wall Street, but only after they've been there a while, and only to a certain degree, and the right rejects them completely. The media is both left and right have not been fully supportive and are still waiting for them to self-implode or to go away. I don't believe either that they're just going to go away. But I don't see anything changing. I see nothing in our banking system. I mean, I'm out in a 63 days with a car and my camera going city to city filming people. I spent all day Friday and all day Saturday filming about 400 homeless vets in Titusville, and the mayor was there. And this is the same mayor that had just a week before allowed this police and the fire department to go in there and bulldoze all their little tents. They destroyed everything these people own. And now those very people whose homes were destroyed in the woods are there getting a haircut, a medical exam, food, a sleeping bag, the things they need. And the mayor's prancing around there like, oh, this is nice. So I went over and I said, Mayor, I said, do you care about these vets? Of course we care about the vets. I say, why is it that many of these vets, if they stop and just sit peacefully, sit on a public bench, you'll have them arrested, put in jail? Well, no, I'm not so sure. I said, would you want me to interview in front of you the vets who and actually show their tickets? They're not allowed to sit in a public park, including one vet who wasn't allowed to sit in a veterans park. I mean, and he wasn't drinking or doing anything. He was just went in with a book to sit there, and a cop came over and says, you can't stay here. He says, I'm a vet. This is a veterans park. He says, it doesn't matter. They're profiling poor vets. And I said, is it against the law to be poor in Florida? No. Then why are you not allowing these people any place to stay and you bulldoze their homes? Where are they supposed to go? So I'm focusing on homelessness right now, and I will be for the next several months out here on the road. This isn't on anyone's talking points. There's 16,000 homeless vets living in the woods in Florida, some with children. I mean, I met a couple. This is really terrible. I met a couple that there are two kids, one's 2 and 1's 6, are sleeping in their car, and they were heating up some kind of noodles on the radiator of their car for their kids. They, the husband and wife, hadn't eaten in 2 days. And I filmed them. And they were, I came over and I said, let me tell your story. And they told me their story. They were just working middle class people. They're not working. I don't see anything that the Democrats are doing or the Republicans in Congress or at the state levels to help these people. And how many we're talking about, Chris? We're talking about 250 million Americans who are just above, at, or below the poverty level. And there's no happy future. So I'm saying that the game is rigged. And in the media, and on the left and the right. Those are my thoughts. I'd like to hear from you, please.
Well, I'm in total agreement. And I think that what a lot of the Occupy movements are discovering is the issue that you raise, that we've criminalized being homeless. There's nowhere to go to the bathroom. You're not allowed to sit down in a city park. And of course, Giuliani, Mayor Giuliani, started that in New York. We have made life impossible for the most destitute. Many of these transition encampments, such as the one you saw, have been, as you know, destroyed and bulldozed, including not very long ago in Camden, New Jersey. I think one of the most fascinating convergences between the occupation movement is this emerging consciousness of what it means to be destitute. I was down in Zuccotti Park the other night at 1 a.m, and the whole character of the park changes because it has become a place where many homeless retreat to, not only because it's a relatively safe place to sleep, but because the Occupy Wall Street movement has an open food kitchen and nobody gets turned away. And I also agree, and of course have written for some time, that neither party cares to address these issues or redress these injustices, and that the only option is civil disobedience, that if we don't do what these occupation movements are doing, there will be no way to thwart the reconfiguration of American society into a form of neo-feudalism, which, of course, is already far advanced. I mean, we know we have Potemkin statistics. They talk about 9% unemployment. Real unemployment is somewhere near 20% when you count people who have stopped looking for work or people who have poorly paid part-time jobs. And as you know, and you've done a lot of work on this, you know, you work 28 hours at Walmart, which is the average time that a worker works at Walmart, you're still below the poverty line. And one of the first things the Walton family does is hand out applications for food stamps to new employees. So we get to subsidize the Walton family.
Final thoughts for you. What do you see is the most appropriate steps forward to awaken the 98.9% of Americans who watch what's going on, just as they did in Vietnam? The highest number was about 683,000 that protested at one time, and that's when we had 135 million Americans, so it was under a fraction of a percent. What do we do to awaken people that they also have some responsibility to pay attention, even if it makes them feel uncomfortable to pay attention?
Well, I think a lot of people have been awakened. The thing about movements, and I've covered movements, I covered all of the revolutions in Eastern Europe, East Germany, Czechoslovakia, Romania. I covered all of the street demonstrations that brought down Milosevic, the two Palestinian uprisings or intifadas. And once movements begin, they have a kind of life of their own. Even the purported organizers don't know really where they're going. The pressure of the movement, and East Germany would be a good example, that the movement was against communist control. It had that kind of amorphous quality that this movement has. And as these small demonstrations, which began in Leipzig, began to grow, culminating with 500,000 people showing up in Alexanderplatz in East Berlin, the communist government on their own began making all sorts of concessions in a desperate bid to stay in power. And yet no one, even the purported leaders, knew where it was going. I remember sitting with most of the leadership on the afternoon of November 9th, 1989, and having them tell me that they hoped that within a year there would be free passage back and forth across the Berlin Wall. By that evening, the Berlin Wall, at least as an impediment to traffic, didn't exist. And that was a very good lesson for me. We don't know. We don't know what's going to happen. We don't know whether this will have a kind of contagion. It's already had a contagion, but whether we'll have a wider contagion. And the most important thing about it is nonviolence, because what happens when you begin to pull the kinds of numbers that were being pulled in Prague or pulled in East Berlin, tens of thousands of people, is that the discredited and isolated elite, power elite, turns to the foot soldiers, i.e. the police, for control. But by that time, the foot soldiers that are meant to enforce the dictates of the power elite no longer have the stomach to use violence against their own. And so that's why I found the even respect would be the right word towards the blue uniform police to be very, very, very astute. If this movement spreads, if this movement grows, if those kinds of numbers start to appear on city streets, then the power elite will react as power elites always do, which is they will turn to more draconian and overt forms of control through violence. But those who have to implement that violence may not remain loyal, and in which case they're finished.
I appreciate all the good work you're doing, Chris. We look forward to hearing from you anytime you have a moment. And hopefully people will read The World As It Is, Dispatches on the Myth of Human Progress. Chris Hedges, thanks a lot. Look forward to our next
conversation. Thanks for having me, Gary.
I'm Gary Knoll. Back in a moment. Then we'll do our health and nutrition and a special in-depth analysis, an original investigative report on the flu shot. You've been told it's flu season coming. Now the ads are starting. And they'll try to scare you. They'll give you information that you must have your flu shot. If not, you put yourself at risk. And wait till you hear what I have to say. It will document and prove, using only peer-reviewed literature, you put yourself at risk by having the flu shot. Then this evening at 7 p.m., in the most downloaded radio program in the United States of any commercial or non-commercial network, and we're looking at 200,000 unique people this week alone downloading the show, I will do the most comprehensive, original, in-depth investigative report on the safety of vaccines. It'll be the whole hour, but I will leave time at the end for your Q&As or comments. This has taken us quite a lot of time. Our doctors and scholars and residents have been working on the research on this. You will hear the entire report. So anyone who cares about vaccine safety, this is the definitive report. And it will be tonight at 7 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network. I have a program once a week called Progressive Commentary Hour. You will not want to miss this. 7 p.m. tonight, Progressive Radio Network. Back in a moment, though, to tell you about why I believe that we have been lied to repeatedly by the CDC, the FDA, and the pharmaceutical companies when it comes to the flu vaccine, which they're promoting heavily right now. This couldn't be any more timely. So back with that. Then my comments upon Steve Jobs' death and CBS's 60 Minutes last night suggesting that if he had had surgery earlier, he'd be alive today. I'll give you my thoughts on that as well. Then we'll be doing the latest on health and healing and some open calls. Please stay with us.
Does she love me with all her heart? Should I worry when we're apart? It's a lover's question I'd like to know. Does she need me as she pretends? Is this a game? Well, then will I win? It's a lover's question I'd like to know. I'd like to know when she's not with me, if she's still true to me. I'd like to know when we're kissing, does she feel just what I feel? And how am I to know it's really real? Oh, tell me where the answer lies. Is it in her kiss or in her eyes?
In this segment of our program, I'll be doing a special report on vaccines. The title of this article, which will be posted today after this program by myself and Dr. Nancy Ashley, is Arm Yourself Against the Flu, Don't Get the Flu Shot. But first, also let me mention that on Friday, our program on some of our stations was a what's called an evergreen repeat. That was simply some mix-up at the engineering level at the station, not our network. If there's ever a question, if you ever turn on and don't hear something or don't hear a new program, always go to progressiveradionetwork.com because that's where we originate all of our programs, and you'll get a, as we did on Friday, a new original live program. Now, it's fall, and another flu season is upon us, and the CDC's big marketing claims that the flu vaccine is going to save 36,000 Americans from dying of the flu. But is that true? Is this really the fact? A study by the British Medical Journal debunks the figure of 36,000 dying of the flu each year by revealing two things. First, the number is not based on counting actual deaths. It comes from a statistical model which only estimates deaths but doesn't actually track them. Second, if anyone questions this large death rate, the CDC inflates numbers by combining deaths from flu, which are generally anywhere from 800 to about a high of 3,000, with pneumonia, as though all of those were from flu. They are not. This is an intentional manipulation. This is an intentional public health fraud. Pneumonia is not the flu. Flu is not pneumonia. So conflating both together is to confuse you and make you think that it's very high a number of deaths. It's not. Actually, the annual deaths from pneumonia, unrelated to flu, are far greater than those from flu. Now, how do they make the annual flu shot? And that's what's important. If you go back, you'll read from part two of this extended report that we learn that the annual flu vaccine is trivalent, consisting of two random strains of the influenza virus, type A, and one of type B. Since 2010, the swine flu virus, the H1N1, another type A virus, has replaced one of the other type A viruses. And because officials can never know in advance which strains of influenza are going to be at large, the flu vaccine is entirely subjective. They're simply guessing. They might be right or they might be wrong. Now, so which flu vaccine you're given makes a big difference. There are currently seven different types of flu vaccines. The FluMist vaccine by MedImmune merits special mention. It's a live virus vaccine that is administered intranasally, thus causing virus shedding and unwitting inoculation of anyone in the vicinity of the vaccinated person for a period of up to 3 weeks. Now let me put this in perspective. Let's say that you have a cold or runny nose. How many times does your hand touch your nose? When it does, the shedding through the mucus is now on your fingers. Think of all the things you touch. A bar of soap, or the top of a plunger of soap, or a water faucet, handle or a refrigerator handle, or a telephone, or a surface area, or some silverware. Everything you touch, what's ever in your nose, and what's ever shedding, viruses, bacteria, are now spread out. These can live quite a long time. So someone else coming in goes to pull out a chair to sit at the table. You've touched the chair. They've touched the chair. They're now contaminated. You have someone who picks up the phone, but you had already picked up the phone. That's causing them to become infected. It's so easy to pass on the infection, and hence you're actually passing on live flu viruses. You're actually a typhoid Mary. You're spreading the flu when you're having live shedded viruses come out of the nose from the flu vaccine. Now, when you understand this, and you understand that this is going to go on for at least 3 weeks, like the oral polio vaccine, this could lead to unintended consequences for the pregnant or immunocompromised. And FluMist has been an unpopular choice as a result. Of the six other injectable flu vaccines, four offer both a single dose and a multiple dose version. The immediate problem with a multiple dose vaccine is that they require more preservatives, which in this case is thimerosal or ethyl mercury. In July 1999, the American Academy of Pediatrics and the Public Health Service agencies agreed that thimerosal should be reduced or eliminated from vaccines because of the potential risks of mercury. And after all, mercury is one of the most powerful neurotoxins with cumulative effects, and to give it to a developing brain is to ask for permanent neurological dysfunction. And while the additive has been removed from most pediatric vaccines, it has not, I repeat, it has not been removed from the flu vaccine. Adults, likewise, are not immune from the neurotoxic effect of mercury, even though their brains are fully developed. Now, these multi-dose flu vaccines from CSL Limited, which is Merck, and Novartis, and GlaxoSmithKline, and Sanofi Pasteur, all contain 25 micrograms of mercury per 0.5 milliliters. Now, the EPA safe limit of mercury is 0.1 micrograms. So to be able to tolerate 25 micrograms of mercury and still be at a safe level, a person would have to weigh a minimum of 550 pounds. However, we're vaccinating children. We're vaccinating who might weigh 20 pounds. We're vaccinating seniors, many of whom are thin. So we're giving an enormous body burden of mercury to these individuals. And so if you don't weigh 550 pounds, which of course most people don't, and especially children don't, then you're receiving literally, so we understand this, I want to be absolutely clear and completely scientific. Every human being in the world who receives 25 micrograms of mercury is receiving a toxic dose of mercury with each injection. Now, none of the package inserts suggest not giving the mercury-laden product to children, and actually recommends that children receiving the flu vaccine for the first time should get two doses 4 weeks apart. Mercury doesn't wash out of the body that quickly, so that means you're getting 50 micrograms of mercury. You've just given an enormous, toxic, neurologically poisoning dose of mercury. Now, what they never mentioned in any of the studies is the inherent flaw of the multi-dose vial of any vaccine. Namely, the actual dose received depends upon the vagaries of how well and consistently the vial is agitated and mixed before each dose is drawn up, because the constituents do not remain in suspension. It is impossible that every dose will contain an identical amount of virus and mercury. Each injection will vary hugely. Further, multi-dose vials require multiple needle penetrations over time, thereby increasing the risk of contamination in each successive dose administered. If you get your flu vaccine in a Duane Reade or a CVS pharmacy, you'll be receiving just such a mystery dose of the Fluvirin and Fluzone multi-dose vaccines. And by the way, who's giving you the flu vaccine? Well, because of the intense campaigning to ensure that every American get a flu shot, one can now get a flu shot in a drugstore, a big box store, a shopping mall, or even a drive-through pharmacy. As a result, unqualified personnel are actually the ones administering the vaccine in many cases. If you get a vaccine outside of a healthcare facility, it is likely you'll be dealing with a pharmacist assistant, or a general employee. Do you really trust them to know what they're doing? To know anatomy well enough to give it in the correct location? To manage an anaphylactic reaction? The package inserts all have the caveat that prior to administration of any dose of vaccine, a healthcare worker should review the patient's prior immunization history for possible adverse events to determine the existence of any contraindications to immunization and to allow an assessment of benefits and risks. And more importantly, quote, appropriate medical treatment and supervision must be available to manage possible anaphylactic reactions following administration of the vaccine, unquote. That's exactly what is in each of the vials in the package insert. Well, can a Walmart do that? Does a Walmart have a medical team, an emergency team there to handle anaphylactic? No, they don't. And also, when was the last time you were asked to give a detailed medical history? Because if you're immune compromised, you're not supposed to get one. If you have any underlying medical condition, you're not supposed to get one. If you have a cold or flu, you're not supposed to get one. So, have you watched people going in? They just walk in, they get their flu shot, and they leave a minute later. No questions asked. So you're playing Russian roulette. Now the larger question is this. Is the flu shot harmful? In Australia in June of 2010, more than 1,000 adverse responses followed seasonal flu vaccine in children under 5. And that was reported to the Therapeutic Goods Administration. Young children were likely to end up in a hospital because of the side effects from a flu vaccine than they were from the flu itself. Research into the outbreak showed that the vaccine caused 2 to 3 hospital admissions due to febrile seizures for every hospital admission due to influenza prevented. Thus, the vaccination program in children under 5 clearly did far more harm than good. Now, most significantly, the flu vaccine has been linked to a high rate of a wasting neurological disease, which usually causes loss of the ability to walk, debilitating fatigue, sometimes death. And this occurs when the body's immune system overreacts to foreign invaders. The immune response creates inflammation in the nerves and degrades the myelin sheaths. This damage interferes with the nerve's ability to transmit impulses. Now, it's been suggested that because influenza virus is grown in chicken embryos, there's an increased incidence of salmonella, which produces a powerful endotoxin. This salmonella endotoxin may increase the permeability of the blood-brain barrier, thus allowing deleterious proteins to enter the nervous system, setting the stage for a variety of neurological impairments from the vaccine. But there are other adverse effects of the influenza vaccine, including malaise, flu-like symptoms for days following the vaccine, anaphylaxis, convulsions, myelitis, facial palsy, Bell's palsy, optical neuritis, brachial neuritis, synoptic, thrombocytopenia, lymphoedema, vasculitis, dyspepsia, pharyngitis, rhinitis, chest pain, and fatigue. I want to use one example, the swine flu H1N1 charade. In 2009, alarms were sounded that we would be facing a pandemic of epic proportions from the swine flu, and there might not be time to make enough vaccine to protect us all. Where actually many Americans actually remembered the swine flu pandemic of 1976, in which far more people were injured and died from the vaccine than from the disease, which turned out to be a non-event and did not jump on the opportunity to save themselves from certain death within the 2009 swine flu vaccine. As predicted by reasonable folks, including here on this radio program, the swine flu epidemic of 2009 was a non-event. It didn't happen. But the swine flu vaccine did, and it didn't go away. The manufacturers were geared up for production, and so the H1N1 virus has become part of the annual flu shot. Now, a confidential letter in 2009 in August sent to the UK government by senior neurologists at the Health Protection Agency was leaked to the British tabloid, The Mail, warning that the H1N1 vaccine was likely to trigger some very serious neurological syndromes similar to the one that the swine flu vaccine of 1996 caused. At the time, 80,000 people came down with the Barrett syndrome, and only 1% died of swine flu. And since the regular influenza vaccine already carries an increased risk of this syndrome, the addition of H1N1 to the formulation makes this unfortunate occurrence even more likely. The H1N1 vaccine by itself has a host of adverse effects and was specifically banned in Finland for causing narcolepsy. Now, package inserts of all vaccines start off with the same disclaimer. Quote, the indication for vaccinating against influenza disease is based on the immune response elicited by the vaccine. There have been no controlled clinical studies demonstrating a decrease in influenza disease after vaccination. Unquote. Let me repeat that. because nobody ever looks at the package insert. Quote, being vaccinated against influenza, the flu, is, quote, based on the immune response elicited by the vaccine. There are no clinical controlled studies demonstrating a decrease in influenza disease after vaccination. This means that since all they have tested for is an antibody response, they have no way to know if the vaccine will prevent the flu. They admit that they don't know if the flu vaccine is effective. Yet the CDC recommends that every American over the age of 6 months get the flu vaccine every year for an entire lifetime. Why? The CDC states that the vaccine is most effective in healthy adults, but how do they know that these same healthy adults wouldn't have avoided the flu anyway, even without the vaccine? No one has ever undertaken a study comparing vaccinated healthy adults versus unvaccinated healthy adults to assess if there are any differences in rates of getting the flu. If a healthy adult is taking their vitamins and vitamin C and other nutrients and juices, they're unlikely to get the flu without getting the vaccine. So why on earth get the vaccine? And how can this so-called science be used as proof that vaccines are effective? They're not. So if you're healthy and you go through a season and you've been vaccinated, they have no way of determining that it was that flu vaccine that caused that. None. They can't say, well, you didn't get the flu because of this. They have no way of determining that. It's just guessing. And when putting your life at risk, they shouldn't be guessing. That's just out and out wrong. But then again, they can be wrong and no one seems to care. And that's the danger. The CDC states that the vaccine is most effective in healthy adults, but they have no way of proving that. If a healthy adult is unlikely to get the flu without getting the vaccine, then don't get it, is the most common statement that can be made. A 2008 study published in The Lancet contested the accepted wisdom that influenza vaccination programs for the elderly reduce hospital admissions for pneumonia. It found that a U.S. managed care population in older adults over 3 seasons, the effect of influenza vaccine was, quote, strikingly lower than previously estimated. So it wasn't helping even the people it was targeted to help. They did not have less flu. Ultimately, although vaccination programs are directed against influenza, in reality it is influenza-like disease illnesses that cause most of the malaise referred to as flu. And because these illnesses are not caused by the influenza viruses found in the annual vaccine, the vaccine cannot possibly prevent such disease. According to the CDC's own Morbidity and Mortality Weekly report, quote, many people vaccinated with the flu vaccine can still get 4 to 6 episodes of influenza-like illnesses during the same season. So, let's put this in perspective in conclusion. The CDC, in a report that no one reads, not doctors, nurses, no one, is saying in their own Morbidity and Mortality Weekly report, quote, many people vaccinated with the flu vaccine will still get sick 6 times this year with the flu. So if the flu shot poses potentially serious health effects, contains mercury, is neurotoxic, has varying doses of flu virus and mercury if it comes from a multi-dose vial, weakens your immune system and doesn't protect you against the flu, what would be the reason to actually subject oneself or one's children to this vaccine? But that choice is yours. I do not tell people to vaccinate or not vaccinate. I believe in freedom of choice. But now you know the story. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
So near, you would never call me dear. Don't you know I'd
open up our lines now as we're going to go over and take your calls on any of the issues that you find important. Give us a call at 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888, and while you're going to be calling in, I'm out on the road, so you're not seeing me in studio in New York, and I'll give you the latest on health and healing, and especially some healing using sea vegetables, some new research from Tisha Johnson that I found important, and also, time permitting, how to lower blood pressure naturally. So we have a lot of good stuff coming your way. So give a call now. Phones are open, 888-874-4888. Oh, I know what I wanted to do. Sometimes you don't know where people are motivated, if they get the message from here or elsewhere, but there's some people who seem to have gotten the message. It's worth listening to. Take a listen now to a little bit of rap music coming right at you. My engineer is getting it set up. When he gets it, he'll let me know. I thought he was ready. He's not. He'll come to you in a moment with this. And when he's
the pork terror is a bunch of issues, just a poor excuse for you to use up on your bullet. How much money does it take to really make a full clip? 9/11, building 7, did they really pull it? And a bunch of other cover-ups. Your child's future was the first to go with budget cuts. If you think that hurts, then wait, here comes the uppercut. The school was garbage in the first place. That's on the up and up. Keep you at the bottom, but tease you with the upper crust. You get it, then they move it, so you never keeping up enough. If you turn on TV, all you see is a bunch of what the fuck. Do this dating so-and-so, blabbering about such and such. And that ain't Jersey Shore. Homie, that's the news. And these the same people supposedly telling us the truth. Limbaugh is a racist. Glenn Beck is a racist. Gaza Strip was getting bombed. Obama didn't say this. That's why I ain't vote for him. Next one either. I'm a part of the problem. My problem is I'm peaceful. And I believe in the people. They say it ain't our fault if we never heard it. But if we know better, then we probably deserve it. Jihad is not holy war. Where's that in the worship? Murdering is not Islam, and you are not observant. And you are not a Muslim. Israel, don't take my side, cause look how far you pushed them. Walk with me into the ghetto, this where all the kush went. Complain about the liquor store, but what you drinking liquor for? Complain about the gloom, but when you pick a broom up, just listening to Pac ain't gonna make it stop. A rebel in your doubts ain't gonna make it out. If you don't become an actor, you'll never be a factor. Pills for million side effects, take them when the pain's felt. Wash them down with diet soda, killing off your brain cells. Crooked banks around the world, we're glad to give a loan today. So if you ever miss a payment, they can take your home away. I think that all the silence is worse than all the violence. Fear is such a weak emotion, that's why I despise it. We're scared of almost everything, afraid to even tell the truth. So scared of what you think of me, I'm scared of even telling you. Sometimes I'm like the only person I feel safe to tell it to. I'm locked inside a cell in me, I know that there's a gel in you. Consider this your belling out, so take a breath and hell a few. My screams is finally getting free, my thoughts is finally yelling down.
Those are some good thoughts. Let's say hello to Francine from Queens. Hi, Francine.
Hi, thank you. I've only started listening to you for a couple of months now, but I'm a professional chef, and I have a group of my friends who've been getting together on the weekends on Sunday and going down to Zuccotti Park and helping them organize their food sorts and their meals and their kitchen down there, and they are getting very organized. Okay, in terms of their food donations, in terms of their food sanitation and their food safety, they've brought in people who do this for a living all the time who are helping them and putting things together. So they're in this for the long haul, okay? They want things to be done the right way. They want things to be organized, and they've got people donating and vendors donating food to them. So they're going to be okay for the whole winter down there, and they're really trying to do the right thing.
Okay, some are trying to do the right thing, and some are agitators, and some hang up and listen over the radio because we're having a bad connection, all right? Here's a larger thought. you will see this week, later on this week, you'll see my filming a lot of the Occupy Wall Street, Occupy Washington, when I was down there last Sunday, helping with the march in front of the White House to ban or at least label genetically engineered foods. Seeing that they're fed is important. We've been feeding, just like we feed everyone at BAI every day. Gourmet, really great organic foods and meals. That's not the point. The point is not whether they're going to be cold or not cold, whether they have a meal or not. Of course, we want people to have humane conditions. The important point is to get them to go beyond their day-to-day efforts and to start to connect with movements that have been around a long time. As I told almost 250 of them in a meeting down on Walker Street, I said, I hope you're all aware that since you finally have awakened before you went to Wall Street to occupy it, there was a civil rights movement, a feminist movement. There's been hundreds of movements. The reason that you all are not eating DDT today is because we fought for 25 years to get it banned. And just a handful of us got it banned, mainly. And the person most responsible was Rachel Carson. It's her identity and her knowledge, her as a marine biologist, her work that made that possible. The rest of us were merely there in our own ways to facilitate that in the forms we had. The reason that you have a safer world, healthier food, a growing organic movement is because of all the movements that were organized for a long period of time, many of which never got any funding or any recognition. So if you bring recognition to a movement, and if the movement's based upon anger, and if the anger is based upon this overarching idea that we have 99% of the American public who are suffering because 1% has got it all, that's good. Now, look at all the groups, thousands of groups that are doing good work, really good work, that can change the problem into varying solutions. Align yourself with those, and then you'll see positive things come. But for that, you're going to have to make this more about helping make it a better world than just offering a form for your anger. There are a lot of really entitled kids, and that's all they are, with a great deal of narcissism. And that's unfortunate. Not all, but I've been there almost for a month. I've interviewed over 1,000 people. I've had meetings with hundreds, and not only there, but in Washington. Same way, in Washington, D.C., when I said, we're there to support you in solidarity, here's some literature, don't want it, on genetic engineering. Hear about closing down nuclear plants, not interested. So it's one-sided. If you're aligning, good. If you're not, then there's not a lot of room. Instead of having all the legislative meetings and the People's Assemblies meetings to show how you can get which issues you want to talk about that day up, just take a look at all the work that's been done prior to this day. There's just, it almost angers me when I think of how much conceit's in this idea. Okay, we're here. Reality, history, and time starts today because we've awakened, but that's all that's important. I'm going to say, hold on a second. Before you get too carried away in your own conceit, there have been millions of Americans who have suffered and fought for your rights to be here today. So we shouldn't be assuming that just because a bunch of kids are in the streets or homeless people are joining them or activists are joining them, that that's the only reality. The reality is nothing's going to happen unless there's a way of assigning the responsibility to help other well-developed, well-messaged, really empowered groups. That's what's important. On its own, I disagree with Chris on this. I believe that it'll grow to 10 or 20,000 of these little meetings, and then like a bubble, an activist bubble, it will dissipate if there's not some form of violence. Unfortunately, I hope that doesn't happen. Then the media will pay another bit of attention to it, and all the celebrities who have been there have already been there, and the activists, and there's only so much they can milk out of that, and then it goes away. So, yeah, you'll have some people staying there through the winter, but when the media is no longer covering them and when they're not getting anything done, but there are other groups like the River Project getting stuff done, cleaning up the Hudson River, and the No More Fracking actually stopping hydrofracking and closing down Indian Point doing that, and getting legislation for a third political party. There's a whole lot of good work going on in the United States. I believe the best they can do at this point is to show their anger, completely legitimate, and then align that anger with groups that can take the anger and make something positive happen from it. Right now, I don't see that happening. Hopefully, that will evolve, and they'll let some adults into the room who will allow that to happen. Right now, that's not happening. And I'm out there, and I know what I see, and I don't need anyone else to tell me what I see. That's unlike Keith Olbermann, who went out and started calling everyone in the Tea Party a racist and loons and nut jobs. Is no different than the guy I heard in the airport the other day calling everyone down on Wall Street a Nazi. This on that 5 o'clock show. Well, that's just a ridiculously irresponsible conversation. But when I actually went out and talked with people there, I found a convergence of many things. But nothing getting done. Marching will not get something done. But boycotting will. Aligning with groups that are causing social change will. But you don't have to start from scratch. The world didn't begin, and social movements weren't created 35 days ago. And it's just shameful that people shouldn't recognize all the good work of all the different people in all the different ways. There are thousands and thousands of groups that can make it a better world, but they don't have funding, they don't have publicity, they don't have a lot of things, but they have determination, and they already have the stories in place. That's where we're going to get changed. Remember, this is not a war. It's 1,000 battles, and you have to address each battle. So therefore, there's no shortages of places that you can associate your energy, align your energy, and get something done. I believe it's closing in the end point. Now, maybe I'm wrong, and if I am, then call in right now and challenge me. But if the nuclear storms occur, the solar storms, and they are nuclear, they're high plumes of radiation, and they're going to hit the Earth, which they will. That's not in dispute. But the utilities tell us, don't worry, be happy. We got it covered. But then I don't see the surge protectors, so they don't have it protected. And how do they know that we're okay? Because they've never had a Carrington effect in our lifetimes. So they're just guessing, because they don't want to spend the money. You realize that then there's no one at Wall Street. There's no movements. There's 20 million people in just the greater New York area, in New Jersey and Connecticut and Pennsylvania, who are going to be contaminated, and the children in particular. What are you going to say when you suddenly see, after a week of no electricity and the power plant's out and Indian Point has exploded? You won't hear it, you won't see it. And the first signs you know is going to happen is when the children have nosebleeds, but the nosebleeds don't stop. And then they'll start bloody diarrhea, and that doesn't stop. And then they're rolled over in a ball and they can't get out of fetal position, and blood comes out of their ears, and then you can't call anyone. There's no medics, there's no doctors, no nurses, no medicine to help at that point. But no one decided it was important enough to support. They had other things. Yeah, well, closing down something that could create genocide at a greater level than it's ever happened in world history, to me, that's a priority. So, because I have been there a long time, I'm making the priority to save lives en masse. But I also believe that if we have people who are compassionate enough, intelligent enough, just aware of the world enough to realize, let's get the priority straight. Saving us from another catastrophe is important. Now, if you doubt me, watch this week when we put up there on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com the children of Fukushima. We brought in the children and parents of Fukushima to the event, anti-nuclear and anti-fracking event we did at the Ethical Culture Center a month ago. All of those people are contaminated. You are now seeing Japan engage in a systematic form of genocide. The officials are corrupt. They should be imprisoned. All of them. The whole government is lying. The reports show that the radiation is in the water, in the soil. It's leaking. It's in the oceans. It was supposed to not hit Hawaii for 3 years. It's going to hit Hawaii in the next 2 weeks. So everything we've been told about Fukushima is a lie. So we have our own reports. We have our own whistleblowers. We have our own experts there. And we filmed in Fukushima. Now, ask someone who lived a beautiful life in Fukushima. It's a beautiful area, that whole area of the coast, including multimillionaires, billionaires, and the beautiful resorts and the private enclaves on the beach, ask him, if you could do it all over again, would making your nuclear plant safe from an earthquake and tsunami, would that be a priority? That would be their number one priority. So if you can find me anything more important in this moment than closing an end point, let me hear what it is. I want to hear what it is. I want to hear something more important than saving 20 million people in the New York area from disease and dying. I'd like to hear that. And if someone can find me something better to align themselves with than saving that much human life, then count me on it. But I just believe that we shouldn't go head over heels and sing something that doesn't have the maturity, doesn't have the spirituality, and doesn't have the commitment to a higher understanding of the dilemma we're in. Raw, unbridled anger must be focused and it must be used constructively. Otherwise, it just degrades into a form of emotional anarchy. That's what I'm hoping comes from it. I appreciate very much, Francine, what you're doing, and I appreciate your help. Just look at things for what they are. One more call before we end this segment of our program from Steve from Manhattan. Hi, Steve, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Gary. My question deals with the radiation from Japan. I'm curious on how far-reaching do you think it is in reference to, say, like products from the Philippines?
Right now, all products in Japan must be tested. If they're not tested for radioactive isotopes, then you could be consuming a contaminated item, and there is no such thing as a safe level of radiation. None. Now, here's the game they're playing, for example. They didn't test any of the dozens of radioactive substances from Fukushima, including plutonium, at all. They tested the two least lethal forms of radiation released. That was intentional because they had a short life. The long-lasting ones, the ones of the last 1,000 years, they didn't test at all. And now they're finding that far more contamination went directly into the water than what they've been leading us to believe. Billions, we're talking about hundreds of billions of gallons of contaminated water have gone in the ocean. Then they lied and said that don't worry, once it's in the water will dissipate it so it won't be active. Then when someone actually caught a whale and they did a biopsy on the whale was loaded with radiation. And the sea vegetables loaded with radiation. Now remember, we're talking about something that will not go away, ever. Not in your lifetime or any generation's lifetime in the future. That once it gets absorbed into something, it will then stay there or migrate up the food chain. If the fish eat the plankton and the small fish eat the large fish, then by the time you eat your tuna or some other large fish, you have a concentrated amount of that. Are we measuring for that radioactivity in seaweed? No. Fish? No. Dairy products? No. Are we measuring it at all in the United States? The answer is no. So we know that in the air it's already covered the United States, come to the United States, but really hit the Pacific Northwest and California in particular. So I wouldn't trust anything unless I saw a complete analysis of every single possible radiolytic microbe that would have impacted it, or isotope that would have impacted it, okay, including from the Philippines. Does that answer your question?
All right. Thank you very much.
Yes, to you. Connie from New York City. Connie, your turn. I'll take one more call because you've all been patient and holding on, and I appreciate it, and I want to be able to get to you. Hi, Connie. Oh, okay, she might not be there anymore. All right, that brings us up to the end of this particular program. We're going to take a break and come back for those of you listening on BAI in 30 seconds to 60 seconds. Please stay with us. And the rest of you, we'll see you tomorrow.
The treasure.